I love the start of the NBA season because there's always a game to watch. And on your smartphone, you can always have access to the latest scores and highlights, or my tweets at NateTokenNBA for that matter. Switch to Net10 Wireless now and you can get double data for life on unlimited plans starting as low as $35. Visit net10wireless.com. That's NET10, the number 10, net10wireless.com to reference terms and restrictions of service and get more information on double data for life. It's a game changer. One of my favorite episodes of the year. One of Ethan Sherwood-Strauss's favorite episodes of the year. Is it time to panic? We're going to go through the teams that have disappointed so far, see whether this is a 10-game blip or whether there's more reason to be concerned. And you have to help me remember to do this, Danny. Actually, assign a rating to each team 1 through 10 of how high the panic meter should be. We're sponsored today by Tracker, the Tracker Pixel. You'll never worry about losing your things again. Go to the tracker.com/capspace for 20% off. Okay, who are you most excited to just hit the alarm bells on here, Danny?
Well, this isn't exactly the greatest crop of time to panic, which is, you know, some of that is also with Cleveland shifting. But let's start with Cleveland anyway, even though they had a win over Milwaukee last night. Cleveland, I think that there are two different ways to talk about this. One is regular season panic, and for me that's really low. That's like a two. I don't worry. You know, the real concern there is if they don't make the playoffs or get into a really unfavorable matchup, if they just don't put their foot on the gas pedal. But I think if for those who were expecting or hoping for the Cavs to be a title winner this year, I think that it absolutely is time to panic.
Yeah, with some of the fundamentals on the Cleveland Cavaliers as of this recording, which is during the afternoon before tonight's games, the 25th net rating in the NBA, -5.8. They are dead last, the blurst of defenses, 30th in the NBA, but they are up to third in offense now. And that's where I had really had more of a concern for them, was if they were really going to struggle to score. And I think they're figuring out some things now. J.R. Smith is getting back on track to some degree. They're using Kevin Love more as a traditional big man lately against some of these height challenged Eastern Conference teams, and LeBron obviously is fantastic, and they don't have Isaiah Thomas back either. So I think offensively they're going to get there. The question is whether they can turn their defense up enough. Before the season, the hope had been that Jay Crowder could really help them. Crowder, for whatever reason, speculation is that maybe, you know, he wasn't able to train as hard this offseason, and he's kind of getting back into shape after the passing of his mother. So Jeff Green is playing really more than he should be. Derrick Rose has not helped them a ton. Wade has looked better these last couple of games, but still was never a great fit there. So yeah, I think it is. I don't think it's time to panic, because would anybody not have them as the title favorites in the Eastern Conference at this moment?
I mean, I'm sure people in Boston would feel differently, but in terms of impartial observers, I think Cleveland is still the clear favorite, and they have so much more room to grow just by fitting everybody in, and because their injured players are more likely to come back than Gordon Hayward. So yeah, I would say if that's your goal, if your goal is to make the NBA finals, then no, people shouldn't be panicking at all, because they're very well positioned for that, assuming they stay healthy. And the concern for me defensively, like, so you talked about the idea, they're, you know, they're third in offense, and it's not only against the Warriors, it's also theoretically, even if the Warriors fell, I think these same problems would be there against Houston. And, you know, maybe some of the other teams, the Spurs, I think would be a little bit easier for them to stop just because the difference in the threats. But, you know, if you were somebody who expected that, you and I both thought that Cleveland, you know, that their title odds were going to be worse this year, just because of the way that aging and a lot of other things go. But you have to defend, because the Warriors have a good offense too. You cannot score them maybe for a game or two in a series. Like, I could see it going six, but winning would be tough.
Yeah, and part of it, as we have mentioned about their defense, is that teams are shooting 43% on three-pointers. The Bucks were 13 out of 30 last night. They're 24th in number of three-pointers given up, and 27th in number of corner threes given up. So that's really bad fundamentals, but they can get a little bit better just as teams regress to the mean a little bit with their three-point shooting. And yeah, they also are pretty miserable in transition. They're 29th in the NBA, allowing opponents to run on 18.2% of their defensive possessions. That's really going to hurt you as well. Presumably they can get a little better with that, maybe not that much, with Rose, Wade, LeBron, Ron is a great transition defender when he decides to run, but doesn't always decide to run. Love is pretty slow getting back. And getting Tristan Thompson back will probably help them a little bit. We'll see whether they go with Love and Thompson together. That's probably a better defensive unit as well. So they're going to get better defensively. I just agree with you that it's maybe not time to panic just because the offense is looking better now. If their offense struggles, then yeah, I'm worried. And nobody thought they're going to beat the Warriors anyway. If you really felt like, hey, there's some hope they could beat Golden State this year, but I don't think anyone necessarily had that. So if we're still saying that Cleveland is probably going to fulfill the expectations we had for them at the start of the year, you know, yeah, they've looked horrendous on offense. The fit hasn't been great. But, you know, I'd say the panic meter is like a 3 out of 10. What would you assign it?
3 is where I would have it as well. Where do you want to go next?
I would like to go to a read. I've moved into this new place now, and I'm in that mode where I just don't know where everything is. We unpacked everything. I forgot. I have to look in like 5 different places to find anything. But fortunately, with my keys, that's not an issue because I have the Tracker Pixel. With the Tracker Pixel, you never have to worry about losing anything that's attached to. Again, they changed everything 8 years ago when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with this new Tracker Pixel, which is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You don't really even notice it on your keys when they're in your pocket. You can put it on your keys, your wallet, your cat. Our cats are indoors, so we don't have to do that for them. And if you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It has powerful LED lights, so you can find things in the dark as well. It can also help you find your phone, even if your phone is on silent through the app. You can, as long as you have the Tracker Pixel, you can activate your phone if you can't find that. Better yet, every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world, so you can locate items for miles away. And thanks to their 30-day money-back guarantee, you truly have nothing to lose. If it's not what you're hoping it would be, you can get your money back within 30 days. So go to thetracker, TRACKR.com/catspace. That's TRACKR.com/catspace. The Tracker, TRACKR.com/catspace to get 20% off any order. That's The Tracker. TRACKR.com/catspace. That'll get you 20% off any order and let them know that you came from us. Okay, who are we going to next, Danny?
Let's do the Denver Nuggets. So the Nuggets, we had this idea of what having Millsap would bring is that they would still have a very good offense, maybe not as ridiculous as it was for the second half of last year, but that their defense would be brought up. They're right now, according to Cleaning the Glasses stats, they're actually 17th in offense and 17th in defense. I am optimistic that they will be better than they are right now, but better than they are right now and where we hoped they would be are not the same thing.
Well, so in terms of record, they're now 6-5. I had them winning 47 games, so they're not that far off of that pace. And you mentioned that they are 17th in offense. I think actually, if I had to pick anything, that they're 17th in defense would be more encouraging to me. In terms of their offense, what's different from last year? Their offensive rebounding is down a little bit. They were second last year. Part of that, I think, is they're just not playing for Reed as much. So I wouldn't expect that to improve all that much. And then they're not getting to the foul line as much either. And I think that's partially due to the fact that the offensive rebounding is down because those plays can result in getting to the foul line.
Well, and not having Gallinari.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great point, too, that he was someone who could get to the foul line pretty well. In terms of their shooting, a concern that they are taking a lot fewer three-pointers than last year. They are 20th in the NBA this year. They were 9th last year, although they're only taking 1% fewer of their shots as three-pointers. It's just that the rest of the league is taking so many more three-pointers. And they also are not taking that many shots at the rim. And they're taking 42% of their shots from mid-range, although a large percentage of those are from floater range. And Nikola Jokic is one of the few guys who actually really can hit from floater range pretty well. So I'm not ready to get incredibly concerned yet about their offense. And they're right about even now in three-point shooting, pretty much where they were last year. But that will be something to watch on the fundamentals, because they're not taking that many threes and they're not taking that many shots at the rim. And they were third in shots at the rim last year, and now they're 28th. So interesting to dig into maybe a little bit more of why that might be. Maybe they miss the spacing that Gallo provided. Maybe Paul Millsap is gumming things up a little bit more. Maybe they're just going to continue to figure it out. We'll see what the answer to that is. But I do have faith that their offense can improve. They have a lot of really good guys. At least Jamal Murray has looked a little bit better. I would have been panicking a lot more about them a week ago. But Murray has had some okay games. They're getting a really nice season out of Will Barton. Nikola Jokic had 40 last night against the Nets' porous, shall we say, interior defense. So I actually wouldn't have them on this list. I mean, they're over 500. And yeah, the offense hasn't looked great, but I think more encouraging is the fact that they've been able to be solid on defense, and nothing particularly stands out defensively about what they're doing. And in fact, they're doing a great job of taking away the three-pointer, although they are giving up a lot of shots at the rim. But even with that, they're still mid-pack on defense.
The other element that I think is a little bit concerning, and it's not really about their play, you brought up the shots at the rim. That was something I was going to talk about. But the bottom of the West, it's not necessarily stronger than we expected in terms of the playoff picture, but it is deeper. And so when you add teams like Memphis having a good start, New Orleans has been competitive to start the year, we'll see what happens with Utah and the Clippers, who have had some good moments and some bad moments, is just that that increases the variability. Because then if a couple of teams get hot, then maybe you have to, it's tougher to get a good seed or to get in, depending on that. And so it's worth watching. And I think that's vaguely true in the East as well. But Denver, I think they're looking like a team that's rounding into form, especially if Jamal Murray can build off of more what he did around a week ago. The last couple of games have been a little bit shakier, but those have been some anomalous games, like the Warriors one. And, you know, that Brooklyn game was just a kind of a weird one with Brooklyn on a back-to-back, and they didn't need him to score because Nikola Jokic was doing a ton of it.
Yeah, well, I think the Nuggets will be in good shape because the Oklahoma City Thunder are currently not on pace to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and one of the just amazing disparities last year, part of why Russell Westbrook won MVP was they were 26-16 in clutch situations, had a positive 20 basically net rating. This year, 0-5, negative 58.8 net rating, 165 defensive rating. And now those numbers are going to calm down. They're going to regress to the mean, yeah. Obviously.
I mean Andrew Wiggins hitting a three off the glass,
yeah,
from 39 feet is probably like a big part of that, you know.
It is, but you know, they also have, anecdotally, last year a lot of their clutch situations were against bad teams. They were in games when they were coming back, like again that game against the Magic and a few other ones. And some of theirs this year, you know, was the game to the against the Blazers recently. They're against better teams, and so that will also hurt their net rating. But you expected that to come back. I think the bigger concerns are just with the offense, because their defense has been fine.
Yeah, also worth noting that they are actually third in the NBA in differential right now, and have already won 3.4 fewer games than expected. Their clutch struggles, a big part of that. Also a big part of that are a couple of blowouts against bad teams. The defense too, when they just completely housed the Bulls and held them to like 73 points or something like that. But they have the second ranked defense right now, forcing a ton of turnovers, which with the length on this team is not a surprise. But and there's nothing really that sticks out in their defense as of this moment as being totally unsustainable. One of the things they've been excellent at is stopping other teams when they get shots at the rim. With all this length, with Steven Adams, that's something that this squad has been good at for a while. And Jeremy Grant, Robertson, Paul George, like Carmelo has had some pretty bad moments at times and helped defense, especially in that Portland game. But overall, I think their D is going to be solid. There is a concern that maybe Melo just doesn't have it anymore. There's a concern that those three guys are not being used that well, that Russell Westbrook was so aggressive last year and that he was able to drive an efficient offense, and that he's kind of slowing it down for two guys who aren't as good as him offensively. That's an issue. But I think they'll also start hitting shots a little bit more. They are actually fifth in percentage of three-pointers that they're taking, which is a massive increase from last year. So I like that. They're only taking 31% of their shots from mid-range, which is good as well. One thing that you noted is they're not getting to the free throw line at all, which is a little weird.
They have guys that you think would be good at it, but yeah, their 16.3 free throw rate is 27th in the league, and last year they were 11th, and some of that I think you could shift based on personnel. Enes Kanter got to the line pretty well last year, and they also don't have a backup center, which is another way that you can get to the line, and they're using Patrick Patterson. Patrick Patterson is not going to get to the line very much, but even guys like, you know, Russ and Paul George.
No, he won't. He's one of, like, Patterson is like one of the lowest free throw rate players like in NBA history,
right,
at this point.
So that is a big disparity, but that's not enough to go from 11th to 7th to 27th. And that can be a foundational part of their offense, especially it's good that they're taking a lot of threes, but the success rate of those will definitely wax and wane, both in the regular season and in the playoffs.
So what is your panic meter rating for these guys?
I got 4.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the differential being good helps. My only concern is just that maybe their stars just aren't going to play that well, you know, because that's been the big reason why maybe they haven't fulfilled expectations so far. It's just, you know, those three guys haven't been that great offensively. And for all that you can talk about them being great players and the fact that at least two of the three are solid spot up options, the fact that number one, this Thunder organization doesn't really have a track record of getting guys to move the ball and get guys involved and to run complex offense that really flows from action to action in a natural way. And number two, that really none of these players have much of a track record of being much above the league average in efficiency. And so you would hope that these guys create a lot of shots, but they're going to be taking easier shots. They'll help each other all get easier shots. But some guys just can create a lot of shots, but just can't get above a certain level in terms of efficiency. And Westbrook may be one of those guys, for example. So maybe they just, this will be less than the sum of its parts offensively. But still, the fact that they're taking as many threes as they are makes me think that it's going to come around.
Yeah, I'm hoping. So are you around a 4 as well?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, what would you think? What's a disappointing result from these guys? Probably not being a top 4 seed would be, and not getting to the second round.
Yeah, I would say. I would say both. Those would be the two lines.
Or even a non-competitive second round loss as well, I think would be a pretty big disappointment for these guys.
Yeah, especially considering we don't know how long they're going to be together.
Well, and maybe the panic meter needs to be a little bit higher just because of Paul George potentially leaving. And if they don't fulfill expectations this year, this all just means so much more. I mean, really, with all the reporting about George preferring to go to LA, you'd have to think that they really would have to get into the conference finals and even not get trucked in the conference finals for Paul George to be considered a favorite to stay there.
I would agree with that, especially if it doesn't look like he's, you know, not necessarily having the best time, but that he's not fully being integrated in the offense. And I would say to a point, he's been a little bit marginalized. I don't think it's egregious at this point. I think Russ has actually been taming himself a little bit to make those guys happy.
So here's one that you didn't have on your initial list, but I wanted to talk about, is the Washington Wizards. Now, at 500, they've had a couple of really bad losses at home. They lost to the Lakers on the road. They got beat up pretty badly by Cleveland, in which LeBron scored those 57 points. And is this team one that has aspirations of being, you know, a conference finalist this year? Do they look like a conference finalist to you so far?
Not most of the time. They've had some nice, you know, little stretches of time. Their offense, you can believe in it. Otto Porter has had some really fabulous stretches, which is an important part for this team, just to have that third option. And he can be a second option for meaningful stretches of time. But their defense...
is he a third option though? Because I mean, he's a play finisher. He's still, I mean, I'd like to see him get the ball a little bit more, frankly, but maybe he just isn't capable of being efficient beyond, he's ultra efficient in his role. But when I think of someone as an option, I think of them as someone who's initiating the offense. I don't know that I put him in that category necessarily.
That might just be a definitional thing for me. To me, if you're like a third option, I don't think you're generally creating too much for yourself, because teams just don't usually have that many guys. But yeah, if you want to say it that way. But I mean, the big issue for them is their defense. They're currently 19th on cleaning the glass, but they've had just these abysmal stretches in terms of transition defense. They've blown some half-court coverages. And other than, you know, like Mahimi playing better and John Wall, you know, finding the fountain of youth on that end, I don't see many real big fixes for them, because the same problems, this is kind of like Oklahoma City's offense, where there are ways that you think they could be better, but when you have the track record, you stop thinking about that as being the most likely outcome.
Yeah, and the track record is that since the last 2 years, the last under Randy Whitman, and then this first year under Scott Brooks, and then this year under Brooks, they have not really defended, and John Wall is not the player that he once was. We know that they really struggle to match up in the half court with opposing wing players. Harrison Barnes torched them last night. We saw what LeBron did to them. They don't really have anyone who is a one-on-one level of stopper, and they don't really have traditional rim protection as a big. Mahimi, of course, that salary has not worked out, in part maybe due to health, but also just because I think really the role that he's being asked to play, especially in the Eastern Conference, where he's a traditional center who just can't keep up with guys. You know, he needs to be out there against another traditional center, and he's not that good at handling the ball or attacking in the post, so you can play small against him when he comes in off the bench. So that's been part of why their bench struggles. But yeah, I I really have no faith that they can get it together defensively. I'm not sure why anyone's going to believe that that could happen. Maybe Markieff Morris's return once he runs into shape, and he struggled again against Dallas in his second game back from that hernia surgery. Maybe he can help a little bit, but I still don't really think that their defense is going to get better. And if their defense doesn't get better, they have a nice offense. They have an explosive offense with their abilities in transition, but they don't have an offense that I think is necessarily, you know, really one of the absolute elite offenses in the league. And so, you know, I just don't, I see them as kind of, you know, a mid-40s type of win team, despite the talent that they do have. And the hope was they could take a step forward this year, and we just have seen no signs of that happening, really.
One thing I wanted to talk with you briefly about the Wizards, and this would be something probably more for our friend Mike Prada, but defining success for this team, because if they make the second round, that, you know, that's what they did last year, they are certainly capable of that even with their misgivings, but I don't know that I would walk away from the season, in, you know, even if they lose in seven like they did last year, though that was a dispiriting way to lose in seven. I don't think that I would walk away from this feeling good, and I think that's right now the most likely outcome here.
Well, certainly their goals for themselves are much higher than that. Now, whether in fact they will reach them, and I think Ted Leonsis' goals for them now as they sit here over $5 million above the luxury tax, perhaps there will be a deal to trim that. But this is an expensive team. They got three guys on this team making max contracts right now. And another two who are making eight figures. So granted, some of those, they were stuck into positions where they had to pay more than ideally they would have had to, but they don't have a ton of flexibility moving forward. The one draft pick that they've been able to make in the last 4 years is Kelly Oubre, and he's become a rotation player, but they don't really have any other young talent in the pipeline. And so maybe Porter and Beal could get a little bit better. Maybe Wall can get a little bit better, but I'm still, the upside is not quite there for this team. And maybe we always thought that that would be the case. So, you know, I don't want to say it's time to panic, because if I had to pick before the start of the season, I would not have picked them to make the conference finals. But if you are someone who really believed in them, you know, I would say it's a five or six. I mean, I think they'll be a quality team. You know, maybe, I mean, 5-5 is not great. Maybe they will, in fact, not even be a top four seed. That would be a disappointment if they're not a top four seed, certainly. And they're not on pace to do that so far. So I'd say, you know, six or so. For the Wizards?
Yeah, I was between a 5 and a 6. And again, it's defining success. But yeah, you're right. If they don't get a top four seed, especially considering, you know, what ended up happening last year, I think that, and the fact that the East doesn't look, you know, at the top to be as strong as it was last year, including Cleveland really stumbling out of the blocks. And so they had an opportunity to do something more similar to what Boston has done. And also, what's an element of that in terms of their seeding that's time to panic is that they've lost these games that they absolutely should have won. You know, the Suns, even though they've looked better since firing Earl Watson, they've come back to earth a little bit since then. The Mavericks had only won one game this year prior to that. The Lakers have, you know, I think that was the best the Lakers have looked all year from what I can recall. So that's bad. You don't want any team's best game, the game they look best, to be against you if you think you're that good a team.
All right, we still have time to get to our last time to panic team. But first, I'm going to tell you how to tell the time in a stylish way with Movement Watches. MVMT.com/CapSpace is your URL to get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns on one of the best holiday gifts that I can recommend. All of that gift-giving anxiety gone with the press of a button, because this beautiful styled minimalism starts at only $95. Time was, at least in my opinion, you had to spend $400 to get a watch that really you're going to be proud to have. And with Movement Watches, that's no longer the case, because by selling online, they're able to cut out the middleman and retail markup. A lot of people in my orbit, my mom, for example, has gotten Movement Watches as gifts, even for the women in your life or the guy in your life. It's a great way to get them a Christmas present that they're going to enjoy. And I always think that people don't really buy as many watches anymore, because you've got a cell phone. You think, all right, I can use that to tell the time. So people don't buy watches for themselves, but a great gift is something that someone's going to appreciate and use, but that they wouldn't feel like they would get for themselves. So once again, the way to get started with them, MVMT.com, movement.com/capspace. That gets you that 15% off today. Let them know too that you came from us. MVMT.com/capspace is that URL again. Join the movement. So the Miami Heat are 5-5. They had a very nice win over the LA Clippers, in which they surged out to a huge lead and were able to hold on for dear life late. Then had a loss to Golden State, in which I was very impressed by their defense and some of the tenacity that they showed. But as many of these kind of middling Eastern Conference offenses will have against Golden State when they're locked in on their switching, they just weren't really able to create much of an opening. And they only really have one creator off the bounce with DM. Waiters unavailable due to the birth of his child. And I guess the real reason for concern right now is their offense.
Exactly. And I'd expect their defense to end up better than 14th, especially because they missed us on Whiteside for five games. Worth noting that they went 2-3 in those games, but their losses were to Boston, San Antonio, Minnesota, all games I would not have expected them to win. They would have had a chance, but I would have expected them to win without him. But the 23rd in offense is a big problem. And they've been, so with Goran Dragic on the floor, they've scored 101.3 points per possessions, which is not great. Without him, they actually have a positive net rating, but they have a 94 offensive rating. They're not scoring at all. And there isn't a ton. Having Waiters, you know, moving guys around in the rotation and things like that will help. I'm not saying it will, but you have to score more reliably in order to win those games, because the idea of kind of like what Memphis did for years, where they would win close and then sometimes they would get blown out. You have to be really, really good to do that enough and actually make the playoffs. And I think that was part of what cost them last year. And there are some warning signs that they're not so much better than they were last year, even though they were only a game away, to make me feel comfortable about where they are.
Yeah, the hope was that a little better health, more internal improvement, the fact that they just looked better over the second half of the season, that could sustain. And I really was a believer in this team. I picked them for 47 wins. The offense currently ranked 22nd. They were only 17th a year ago. They did lead the league, as Albert Nahmad noted, in drives per game. Although, oddly enough, we're right down near the bottom of the league in getting to the foul line. But a lot of driving kicking, and they probably shot it unsustainably well from downtown last year with guys like Tyler Johnson, Waiters, Dragic, all having perhaps career years. And this season, they're still getting up plenty of threes, but that's dropped to 35% now, which is 20th in the NBA. And they're also getting a fair number of shots at the rim and converting those. Okay, I do think Whiteside is really more important to them offensively, as long as they don't try to throw it to him in the post, of course. And they're not taking that many mid-rangers. The other big problem they have, though, is turnovers. And that is really an artifact of just not having quite enough creators. Josh Richardson, we saw, although he played a wonderful defensive game against Golden State, was just kicking the ball all over the gym. And a lot of the same guys, Justice Winslow, is being asked to do too much right now. So I think the offense could get a little bit better, especially because Whiteside has missed time. But really, I think where they're going to have to kill it is on defense, where they ranked 5th a year ago. They are 16th this season.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to really kick in there, and having Whiteside will absolutely help, because he also pushes other guys down in the rotation. And Whiteside, while he's definitely imperfect defensively, and you and I have talked about that, particularly in the playoff series, generally speaking, opponents don't shift their whole strategy based on one guy. You know, they're definitely not going to change the rotations, but they really won't shift that much. And so there'll be certain matchups where he'll do well, and certain ones, like against the Warriors, where he'll struggle. And I think the other issue, which is more relevant for Miami than maybe I would say for Washington, is just that the bottom of the East right now looks better than we thought it would. You know, the Sixers have had a better stretch recently. The Pistons had a win tonight over the Pacers when they look good, and the Pacers still have logged, you know, they have 5 wins. The Magic are 7-4. And so if it's going to take 43 instead of taking 37, that's much more difficult for Miami to handle.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to just think about it now, if you're going to make some revised predictions, you know, Detroit is now 8-3, amazingly. Orlando is still at 7-4. The Knicks, 6-5 after losing tonight. So, you know, I think they still... And the Heat are still right now in 8th place, although they've got Cleveland and Charlotte below them, and Milwaukee, all teams that you think are going to start playing better. So they also have those teams behind them that are going to be threats. And so, yeah, I mean, I think if you say that Philly is for real, that Philly might be better than them. And that, you know, Philly's 6-4 and the Heat are 5-5, you know, or I'm sorry, 5-6. So not a huge, I had a really small font on my computer for some reason there. You know, I still like them better than the Knicks, but I think you're correct that especially with Detroit, Orlando and Philly looking much better. And then some of these teams below them have got to start playing better as well. It will be a little bit more of a dogfight than we anticipated. So I guess my rating for them, if they could just get a little bit better on both ends, I think they'll be in there to make the playoffs. But if you, like me, were someone who's predicting them to be a top four seed in the conference, your panic meter's, with all the factors that I mentioned, your panic meter's got to be pretty high, you know, maybe like an 8. If you're someone who just said, they'll be making the playoffs, you know, then maybe your panic meter is like a 4.
I'm right between those at a 6. I think that they can make it in, you know, as long as they play well, they can do it. I haven't really gone through their schedule yet to get the ebbs and flows of it. It's so early that, you know, you think the remaining 71 games in their case will largely balance that kind of stuff out. And they do need to get guys back. You know, Waiters has missed time, Whiteside has missed time, and those guys are both extremely important for what they do. And Miami is a deeper team than most, but they've also dealt with more, I would say. Well, actually, you think about Orlando. They've been dealing with Elfrid Payton being out and then DJ Augustine being out. And it's an even year, so that's even more devastating. But I think that Miami, they have the fundamentals. Like, I have a reason to believe that they will be better than they are, but I don't have as much confidence in that as I do in, like, let's say Milwaukee, especially because Milwaukee just added a piece that's going to make them better too.
Yeah. Okay, let's hit up a little bit of news here. The Celtics, despite beating the Lakers tonight, with a couple of potentially significant injuries. One is Al Horford. Now, in the concussion protocol, he did miss that game against the Lakers, which they're able to win anyway. He started suffering symptoms early in the day on Wednesday after not having any, but he did get clocked during that win over the Hawks on Monday. And you'll recall that Horford missed significant time last year as well with a concussion. I think it was over 2 weeks, and actually gave an interview about like kind of how miserable he was during that period. So it appears that he may be a little bit more susceptible now to these sorts of injuries. And if you'll recall last year, obviously a different team, they really struggled in his absence. And I expect that once they go up against some good competition, that they are going to miss him a ton, especially on offense, because at backup big man, you're down to Baines, who is an okay stopgap, but then you've got Daniel Tice behind him, or Gershon Yabusele, really not much in the way of established NBA bigs. And considering that Boston has already struggled offensively, especially with Horford off the floor, you have to wonder whether they're going to be able to maintain this pace. The good news for them is they banked quite a few wins already.
Yeah, they banked quite a few wins, which is important. And they have a pretty tough stretch in terms of opponents, though a lot of the games, the hardest games are at the Garden. They play Charlotte on Friday, Toronto on Sunday, then at Brooklyn, and they host the Warriors a week from Thursday. And so we don't know how long Horford's going to be in the protocol. The hope is it's going to be really short, but losing one of your best players and somebody who really helps make their offense hum in particular. I mean, we saw that in the game we did for the Twitter NBA show against Oklahoma City, where in that second half, Horford was just a key piece of what made all of that function. And none of their other bigs provide all of the different elements that he can bring. So I'm not worried about where they're going to go. I'm a little bit worried that this susceptibility, as you mentioned, that, you know, you always want to be cautious, especially when a guy's in the concussion protocol again, that not this time, but if it happens again at a time that is less convenient, that could be an issue.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that a lot of these concussion protocol, the NBA's concussion protocol seems pretty stringent at this point, and it really doesn't seem like the type of thing you can get over in a day or two. I mean, there really are steps that kind of take, you have to do something, and then you wait a day, and you do something else, and you wait a day, and you do something else. So it's really, it could be, hopefully it's not that many games. Jason Tatum also was forced to leave the game against the Lakers with a sore right ankle. Doesn't recall exactly when the injury occurred, apparently, but he left it in a walking boot. We'll have an MRI tomorrow. So they're going to miss him as well. They're starting to run out of bodies on the wing, even for perhaps the league's deepest team on the wing, maybe behind Golden State. What else do we have in terms of news here, Danny?
So there's Luol Deng, who signed a huge contract with the Lakers, of course, in 2016, is unhappy that he has been basically cast aside after starting opening night and then basically not playing much ever since then. The problem with that is the nature of buyouts in the current NBA system. So they, of course, the Lakers would love to trade him. There just aren't that many worse contracts in the league. But if you buy a player out, that money is locked in on your books. There's nothing you can do. And the Lakers value flexibility. They don't know exactly where they're going this summer, but they know they want to use space. And so unless he leaves just a ton of money on the table, I think he's just going to have to grin and bear it.
Yeah, because the issue is once you waive a guy or stretch him and buy him out, there's no way to get him off your books completely. And the Lakers' plan really of getting two max guys next year depends on getting him off the books completely. And so if they certainly are not going to agree to just about any solution that leaves permanent money on their books going forward. And Deng, of course, with that 4-year, $72 million deal that is 2 years to go after this one, would have no incentive to do that. I'm sure he wants to go somewhere and play, but the fact is, it's just unless the Lakers are willing to give up significant draft pick compensation right now to get rid of him, I don't see any path for him to get to another team unless it's, you know, for an equally bad contract. You know, maybe, you know, who actually I think he could really help would be the Wizards. But would the Wizards be willing to give up something to trade back Jan Mahimi to the Lakers, who makes a little bit less because at least Deng can play? I don't see it. Would have to be pretty significant for the Lakers, though, because Mahimi probably has even less of a chance of helping than Deng. I was talking to a few people in the Heat organization about, you know, whether they think Deng can still play or not, and they said, yeah, you know, just he was successful for them at the four, and the fact that he hasn't been able to play the four at all, and really hasn't gotten any kind of a chance to play at all this year. I mean, he didn't just completely forget how to play, even if he does get older. So I still think he could be a rotation guy on the right team, playing in the right role, even if he will be, of course, quite overpaid.
The other one that I thought of like that is Miles Plumlee, with the idea being that Miles Plumlee is basically dead or dead-esque money. And so he costs, I think it's like $5 million more per season. And at that price for the Hawks, I mean, he could help them. And that might not be a deal that they want to do right away, but let's say they do realize in this summer that they're going to need to clear this money, it's a lot easier to clear $12 million a year than it is to clear $17 million.
In Philly, Jared Bayless out now with another wrist injury indefinitely, that he has swelling in his left wrist after he bruised it in Friday's win over Indiana, and he's supposed to be reevaluated on Saturday. Dario Saric starting in his stead and has played well as the Sixers have taken off. DJ Augustin, as you mentioned, still out with that hamstring issue, although the Magic beat the Knicks tonight. Kristaps Porzingis saying that he has bursitis in his right elbow and might need a procedure after the season, and that whenever he hits it, it just swells up and he can't stretch his arm out. This is one to maybe watch a little bit, Danny, because if the Knicks fall out of it, you could see them shutting him down and then them really getting to be pretty tanktastic pretty quickly if in fact a procedure is required. We'll see, though, whether Kristaps is going to want to do that with the potential extension negotiations on the horizon. But you wouldn't think that an elbow injury would be something that would affect things too much there.
I wouldn't expect it to. But yeah, you're right for that purposes. And again, I think we're going to talk about this a lot. This is the last year before lottery reform. And I think certain teams are going to see that as when you're out, you're out. And hopefully, you know, the Knicks have had these wonderful comeback wins the last two games that they're not thinking about that for a long time. But if they do, this could rear its head.
In Memphis, Wayne Selden with that quad injury that's had him out since early in October now has been upgraded to at least being day-to-day, but with as much time as he's missed, he's got a while to go. Meanwhile, another quad injury, Kawhi Leonard, Greg Popovich with some comments a few days ago saying that his rehab has been more difficult than anticipated and he's making progress, but it's very slow, and that he even compared it to being slower than Tony Parker's rehab, which that's not good when Tony Parker like had a complete rupture of a tendon there. Danilo Gallinari did not play on Tuesday against the Spurs with a strained left glute, and he might be back relatively soon, but has missed a couple of games here and doesn't look like he was having trouble walking when he initially injured it on Sunday. And what else we got here?
Sabonis, Domantas Sabonis missed tonight's game, which lost against the Pistons with a calf. He'll be back for the next game, but we don't know. He's still day to day. And Derek White, who was drafted out of Colorado by the Spurs and had some nice moments in summer league, is dealing with a broken right wrist. So even though he hasn't been playing for the big squad, he will not be playing for the big squad for a while.
Yeah, and White, really, the thought was that 23, although he had a circuitous path to the league starting at a small college before transferring to Colorado, at 23 the hope was maybe on a Spurs team that was limited at point guard with Parker out, that he could contribute. But Greg Popovich saying basically no, like he's not in the rotation, not even thinking about being in the rotation early on. Not great when you draft a 23 year old, and now if he's going to miss some developmental time, that is not fantastic. With the Hornets, Nick Batum, about a week away, could play as early as November 15th per their beat writer Rick Bonnell. And then Michael Kidd-Gilchrist has missed a number of games with a personal absence, but he is set now to return on Friday in Chicago. Fred Hoiberg says that newly elevated starter at the three, David Nwaba, a defensive specialist, now out 2 to 4 weeks with a pretty bad sprained ankle. So Paul Zipser will return to the starting lineup there. And then the Knicks are apparently trying to trade Mindaugas Kuzminskas with Joakim Noah potentially returning. And Kuzminskas, for whatever reason, has been totally out of the rotation. I thought he played okay at times last year, shot it better than expected. So I'm not going to say that he can't help a team. There might be some teams that would consider trying to bring him in. He's an older guy, making what was the room exception last year about $3 million this season. And he's already in his mid-20s.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get an opportunity. I mean, it is ridiculous how many talented bigs the Knicks have that are marginalized. And remember, they still are missing Noah, who shouldn't play over those guys, but you never know because he's, as you said, coming back from the suspension.
Yeah, Kuzminskas is pretty limited defensively, but you know, I think he could help a team like the Pelicans or even maybe the Thunder. Those type of teams that just could use another guy who can shoot a little bit, run the floor in transition, bring some energy. Teams that are a little bit weak off the bench, though, it's always difficult, of course, to say, all right, he would have to move probably with the Knicks not having the roster space, either get traded for a guy with a non-guaranteed contract or the team to which he'd be traded would have to waive that guy. All right, we done here?
Well, I'll promote a couple of things. So I did a Warriors Watch podcast on Warriors Wolves. So if you want to hear my thoughts on that and the bench play without Kevin Durant and a bunch of other stuff, I talked about it with Adam Lordson. I just released Real Jam Radio with Matt Moore of CBS Sports. It was fun. We talked about a lot of different stuff, the Bledsoe trade, the Cavs, all their stuff. And then you can still read my piece on the Bledsoe trade at the Sporting News analysis at The Athletic for the Warriors game. And yeah, and you can buy my book. It still exists. 100 Things Warriors Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. That is out in bookstores and online now, so you can check it out. And we will be doing the Twitter NBA show on Thursday night. Really great slate of games. I mean, Cavs Rockets should be an offensive display at the very minimum. And then Thunder Nuggets, two teams that we've enjoyed talking about and watching this year, and the very first appearance of the Denver Nuggets on the Twitter NBA show.
Yeah, I will see you in a little over 12 hours, Dan. We're recording this one pretty late tonight. Don't forget about our sponsors today. Movement Watches, mvmt.com/capspace. It gets you 15% off your purchase there. And we will talk to y'all tomorrow night. Wrap up the week with talking about tomorrow night's games. Fall is my favorite time of year because there's always a game to watch with the NBA season back started. And with your smartphone, you'll always have access to the latest scores and highlights. If you switch to Net10 Wireless now and get double data for life on unlimited plans starting as low as $35, visit net10wireless.com, net10wireless.com, to reference terms and restrictions of service and get more information on double data for life. It's a game changer.